We're continuing chapter 21 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. To my beautiful kitten, who is going to... And I love her very much. And so we were in the middle of a little conversation between our three heroes. So Ron had just asked who Hermione was writing the novel. And she goes, Victor. Crumb? How many other Victors do we know? Ron said nothing, but looked disgruntled. They sat in silence for another 20 minutes, Ron finishing his transfiguration essay with many snorts of impatience and crossings out, Hermione writing steadily to the very end of the parchment, rolling it up carefully and sealing it, and Harry staring into the fire, wishing more than anything that Sirius's head would appear there and give some advice about girls. But the fire merely crackled lower and lower until the red-hot embers crumbled into ash, and, looking around, Harry saw that they were yet again the last in the common room. By the way, there are exactly two people in this world Harry should ask about girls. And they are related, and they are twins. And they will tell Harry exactly what to do to get him laid. Well, night, said Hermione, yawning widely, and she set off up the girls' staircase. What does she see in Crumb? Ron demanded, as he and Harry climbed the boys' stairs. Well, said Harry, considering the matter, I suppose he's older, isn't he? He's an international Quidditch player. Yes, but apart from that, said Ron, sounding aggravated, I mean, he's grouchy git, isn't he? Bit grouchy, yeah, said Harry, whose thoughts were still on show. They pulled off their robes and put on pajamas in silence. Dean, Seamus, and Neville were already asleep. Harry put his glasses on his bedside table and got into bed, but didn't pull the hangings around his four-poster. Instead, he stared at the patch of starry sky visible through the window next to Neville's bed. If he had known this time last night, in 24 hours' time, he would have kissed Cho Chang. Night, grunted Harry. It grunted Ron from somewhere to his right. Night, said Harry. Maybe next time, if there were a next time, she'd be a bit happier. He ought to have asked her out. She'd probably been expecting it and was really angry with him now. Or was she lying in bed, still crying about Cedric? He didn't know what to think. Hermione's explanation had made it seem all more complicated rather than easier to understand. That's what they should teach us here, he thought, turning over onto his side. How girls' brains work. It'd be more useful than divination anyways. Neville snuffled in his sleep, and an owl hooted somewhere out in the night. Harry dreamed he was back in the DA room. Cho was accusing him of luring her there under false pretenses. She said that he had promised her 150 chocolate frog cards if she showed up. Harry protested, and Cho shouted, Cedric gave me loads of chocolate frog cards, look. And she pulled out fistfuls of cards from inside her robes and threw them into the air, and then turned to Hermione, who said, You did promise her, you know, Harry. I think you'd better give her something else. How about your firebolt? And Harry was protesting that he could not give Cho his firebolt, because Umbridge had it. And anyway, the whole thing was ridiculous. He'd only come to the DA room to put up some Christmas baubles shaped like Dobby's head. Then the dream changed. His body felt smooth, powerful, and flexible. He was gliding between shiny metal bars, across dark, cold stone. He was flat against the floor, sliding on his belly. It was dark, yet he could see objects around him shimmering in strange, vibrant colors. He was turning his head. At first glance, the corridor was empty, but no. A man was sitting on the floor ahead, his chin drooping onto his chest, his outline gleaming in the dark. Harry put out his tongue. He tasted the man's scent on the air. He was alive, but drowsing, sitting in front of the door on the end of the corridor. Harry longed to bite the man, but he must master the impulse. He had more work to do. But the man was stirring. A silvery cloak fell from his legs as he jumped to his feet, and Harry saw his vibrant, blurred outline towering above him, saw a wand withdrawn from a belt. He had no choice. He reared from the floor and struck once, twice, three times, plunging his fangs deeply into the man's flesh, feeling his ribs splinter beneath his jaw, feeling the warm gush of blood. The man was yelling in pain, and then he fell silent. He slumped backward against the wall. Blood was spattering onto the floor. His forehead hurt terribly. It was aching fit to burst. Harry, Harry! He opened his eyes. Every inch of his body was covered in icy sweat. His bed covers were twisted all around him like a straitjacket. He felt as though a white-hot poker were being applied to his forehead. Harry! Ron was standing over him, looking extremely frightened. There were more figures at the foot of Harry's bed. He clutched his head in his hands. The pain was blinding him. He rolled over and vomited over the edge of his mattress. "He's really ill," said a scared voice. "Should we call someone?" "Harry, Harry." He had to tell Ron. It was very important to tell him, taking great gulps of air. Harry pushed himself up in his bed, willing himself not to throw up again, the pain half blinding him. "Your dad," he panted, his chest heaving. "Your dad's been attacked." "What?" said Ron, uncomprehendingly. "Your dad, he's been bitten. It's serious. There was blood everywhere." "I'm going for help," said the same scared voice, and Harry heard footsteps running out of the dormitory. "Harry, mate," said Ron uncertainly, you were just dreaming." "No," said Harry furiously. It was crucial that Ron understood. "It wasn't a dream, not an ordinary dream. I was there. I saw it. I did it." He could hear Seamus and Dean muttering, but didn't care. The pain in his forehead was subsiding slightly, though he was still sweating and shivering feverishly. He retched again, and Ron leapt backward out of the way. "Harry, you're not well," he said shakily. "Neville's gone for help." "I'm fine," Harry choked, wiping his mouth on his pajamas and shaking uncontrollably. "There's nothing wrong with me. It's your dad we've got to worry about. We need to find out where he is. He's bleeding like mad. It was a huge snake." He tried to get out of bed, but Ron pushed him back into it. Dean and Seamus were still whispering nearby. Whether 1 minute passed, or 10, Harry didn't know. He simply sat there shaking, feeling the pain recede very slowly from his scar. Then there were hurried footsteps over the stairs, and he heard Neville's voice over again. "We're here, Professor." Professor McGonagall came hurrying into the dormitory, in her tartan dressing gown, her glasses perched lopsidedly on the bridge of her bony nose. "What is it, Potter? Where does it hurt?" He'd never been so pleased to see her. It was a member of the Order of the Phoenix he needed now, not someone fussing over him and prescribing useless potions. "It's Ron's dad," he said, sitting up again. "He's been attacked by a snake, and it's serious. I saw it happen." "What do you mean, you saw it happen?" said Professor McGonagall, her dark eyebrows contracting. "I don't know. I was asleep, and then I was there."
"You mean you dreamed this?"
"No," said Harry angrily. "None of them understand. I was having a dream at first about something completely different, something stupid, and then this interrupted it. It was real. I didn't imagine it. Mr. Weasley was asleep on the floor, and then he was attacked by a gigantic snake. There was a load of blood, and he collapsed. Someone's got to find out where he is."
Professor McGonagall was gazing at him through her lopsided spectacles, as though horrified at what she was seeing.
"I'm not lying, and I'm not mad," Harry told her, his voice rising to a shout. "I tell you, I saw it happen."
"I believe you, Potter," said McGonagall curtly. "Put on your dressing gown. We're going to see the headmaster."
And that's the end of chapter 21. Next we'll read chapter 2 called St. Mungo's Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries. I hope you like that, kitten. I hope you have a good night's sleep. I hope you feel better. And just relax and sleep well and have sweet dreams about me because I'm the most adorable puppy in the world. And you're the most adorable kitten in the world, so we match perfectly. I love you so much, kitty. Good night.